lado.
Really?
Alright,
that's
nice. I start to worry. If I were to leave.
Are you saying you're O.J. Simpson?
This guy's a man shames his days built high.
See, I was gonna get there.
Yeah, it was me. I did it. It's sorry.
Okay. I know you're only making that joke because of the TED show.
I'm not. Actually, I'm making it because it's going to be relevant to today's episode. But yeah.
No. Yeah, no, dude, when that shows up at the end of at the last episode of TED, I laughed so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like the whole, like, the real killer is still out there.
Yeah.
It's so good. My God. I was actually just talking to mom that she should check out the show. I was like, have you watched Ted on Peacock yet? And she was like the movie? I was like, no, the prequel show to the movie that Seth MacFarlane created, and it obviously is still Ted in. And she was like, oh, then no, I haven't watched it.
Genuinely a good show. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. I mean, there are some things, some issues that of Ted and of Seth retconning his own mythology from first Ted movie,
but you know, it's like, who cares? And you know, it's there's the things I had problems with. I mean, this obviously isn't our episode for the day, but is like things last a little too long. You know, there's some things like when they're in the safe deposit box, I think that was a little too weird and it lasted a little too long, right? You know, there are moments like that I think are unnecessary or whatever, but that feel like a Family Guy thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
But overall, it's great.
Yeah, I would hope that maybe since it was Peacock's most, like, their highest viewed show, like, premiere-wise, I would hope that maybe they'll give Seth a season two.
I hope so. Because I enjoyed it. Yeah, I didn't think I was going to, and here we are, you know?
Yeah. Well, welcome back, everyone. First of all, we hope you enjoyed last week's episode.
No, you didn't. I can prove it.
Yeah. No one has seen it. but also, I think next time we have two other guests on, maybe we should, like, meet in person. Because I didn't realize it. But there's a moment because when Zach said he couldn't hear us anymore,
yeah,
I think his Wi-Fi had switched or something, or his Wi-Fi mm-hmm. reset. Because I was showing Ashley how I also didn't realize that our squares move periodically throughout the episode. Well, I don't think on purpose, but I think it's because someone's audio is changing, so it's moving. It's like prioritizing it. You know,
it's interesting.
Well, while we were recording, my computer said that Zach's audio had changed.
Mm-hmm.
For like maybe 6 seconds. If you're watching the YouTube video, Zach like disappears, and you, me, and Alex are just like, because the recording, we can still hear him.
Yeah,
but. When I downloaded it, and then he pops back in, and then when we had to cut after we figured out what the problem was, Ashley laughed so hard because I also didn't realize it, uh-huh. but Zach had taken off his glasses, and when we cut back in, he's just like sitting there like,
whoops.
But you know what? It was still, you know, I'm still glad we had the boys on. No, I still thought it was a good episode. I mean, sure, you guys listening or watching didn't like it, but you know what?
Or didn't watch it because like I was on the YouTubes and I saw that it was like three. It had been a week. There's three.
Yeah,
there's like three views. You know, that's so low, man. That's lower than the Wolf House, man. You know?
I know. Here, let me look at the YouTube studio.
It might even right be lower.
Four views.
Boom.
As compared to The Dark Knight, the previous week, it had Dark Knight had 28.
Listen, like, sometimes I'm seeing these things and these people, who, which is why I think we should get a TikTok, but also I'm seeing these podcasts or these people that, you know, discuss, not just movies, but, like, people discuss things and whatever their niche topic is, and it's got, like, thousands of engagements, like, thousands of likes and views and whatever. How? I'm better than these people are. I just know it. You know?
I think it's also because they're probably paying a company to help with exposure. But you are correct. This is going to break your heart. Locke is officially our lowest viewed episode.
Damn it.
Sleepy Hollow beat it by one view. Yeah, you know, see? There it is right there at the very bottom. And then you got Sleepy Hollow.
If anything were to ever happen, and we get a higher volume of listenership, people are going to listen to this, and they're going to be like, but no. Or they're going to be like, why are they complaining? Look at how many, you know, views and listens they get or whatever. But, man, that's now, guys. This is then. This is back then when we're struggling to find anybody.
Oh, yeah, but...
You guys are living in the present. This is the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, legitimate future Rain and future Jeremy are the ones who are going to be like, man, remember when we couldn't get anyone to listen?
Not for lack
now
of
we
control.
Can't get enough people to listen.
Yeah, I know. Now it's just like, oh my God. You know, it's overwhelming. I settled down.
Well, I think that's enough banter for now.
Sure.
But hopefully everyone will listen to this episode. Now, I think everyone will, because I'm 90% certain. Yeah, our Fire Walk With Me episode has 59 views. So I think
it's pretty good.
I guess we're going to become the David Lynch podcast.
That's fine.
Or something. Which, speaking of David Lynch, shout out to our good friend Stormy Nelson. She's also a big fan of David Lynch. And so I told her that we were doing this, and she was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to listen. So, Stormy,
that's one guaranteed listen right there.
Yeah, for sure. Now before we refresh everyone's memory on, what movie we're doing, here's a little inside baseball. When this episode comes out, I will be at Disney World.
Way to shoehorn that in.
I had to. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to take a week off, just because I was going to be at Disney. So we're recording this literally the night before I'm leaving. Of course, when y'all listen, it'll be coming out on the normal days. But
yeah, you're going to be on Splash Mountain by then or whatever.
Yeah, Splash Mountain doesn't exist anymore, dog.
The Texas Giant. What's that one?
That's literally like right down the road from you guys.
That's Six Flags. Okay. No, I know. No. You're going to be riding the Superman, right? Or whatever. I don't know. You're not a blast.
Well, one more sidebar and then we're going to get into it.
Finally.
I'm deeply disappointed because when Ashley and I went to Disney World last year, I really wanted to do the Country Bears Jamboree.
I hate this conversation.
Hang on. Well, as of yesterday, relative to this recording, as of yesterday, it has been shut down for good. So I will never get to see the Country Bears Jamboree. I'm a sad boy.
Sad.
It's okay. I'll just ride. Ashley and I will ride Haunted Mansion like 6 times. I don't think Ashley will complain.
Yeah. No.
Anyway. But yeah. So yeah, I wanted to shoehorn that in. So. So that way, if future Rain, which will soon be present Rain, becoming future Rain, if he fucks up the edit, you'll know why, because he was rushing. Okay. Anyway, so Jeremy, should we remind everyone what we're talking about?
Yeah.
This week, since they didn't watch last week's episode.
Nope.
This week, we are doing another David Lynch film this season. It was my pick. And this was one that I was really interested in, especially when you told me that it was getting a Criterion release. And I was like, well, I have to get it. And I know nothing about the movie, knew nothing about it until I finished it today. Today, we are discussing the 1997 surrealist neo-noir horror film that is David Lynch's Lost Highway. I didn't want to know anything about the movie before I started watching it last night.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to know what it was considered.
Sure.
Even though I knew going in, like, it's Lynch, it's probably going to be surreal, which it was. But then I read that those two descriptors, neo-noir and horror film. And yeah. I was like, really? Neo-noir, yeah, with shout out to our Mulholland Drive episode. That one's definitely a neo-noir as well.
Yeah.
But I was like, horror? I don't see horror being a Lynch genre.
Yeah, well, in this case, it kind of is, right? And I think he touched on it a little bit with Fire Walk With Me, this horror element to him. And I mean, I've seen Eraserhead being thrown around as sort of like a horror film, even though it's more of a surrealist film. I wouldn't call it a horror film, but other people think that it's pretty creepy and pretty scary, which is fine. But I think that Fire Walk With Me really kind of cranks that up a notch. And then this one is sort of keeping with that trajectory, especially with Robert Blake's character and with like the shots of the murdered Patricia Arquette. You know, those are some pretty frightening images, especially with the music also. I would say horror fits pretty well.
Yeah. Now, I'll touch on it later once we get into everything, but I did want to put this at the top of the show, which is of the Lynch films I've seen so far, the ones that we've done for the podcast, which we're going to keep doing them for the podcast, which I love, but of Mulholland Drive, Fire Walk With Me, and Eraserhead, this one was really different in the way that it looked, in the way that it felt. I mean, there were moments I was like, this is very Lynch. But then there were times where I was like, this is a Lynch film? Like, this can't be. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying it's a good thing that he really kind of kept me guessing the whole time. There was something about it. And maybe, and again, the benefit of doing the show is that maybe we will be able to figure out what that was, at least for me,
sure.
Why this one felt so different. But for my first impression, obviously I loved it. Because it's Lynch. I mean, of those movies I just mentioned, the one I liked the least was Eraserhead, which is right there over my shoulder.
Unreal though, man. Cause it's so good. You know, Eraserhead, that's a special one, you know?
I mean, thankfully, I physically own it, so maybe I'll give it another rewatch. But
honestly,
but of the ones we've done so far, that one was my least favorite. But anyway, so Jeremy, would you like me to hit everyone as best I can with a synopsis of this?
Honestly,
movie?
I was going to say no.
Okay, that's fine. That's perfectly
because
fine
because you had mentioned at the top of the show. I think you know. It was funny the way you said it because you're like, you know, I didn't know what any of this is about until I watched it, until I watched it. And I was about to say, how? You know, congratulations. Because this movie is sort of, it's not as impenetrable as, I don't know, like Inland Empire. Inland Empire is sort of impenetrable. Right. It's sort of like this fever dream of a David Lynch nightmare, right? Is what Inland Empire is. This I think is the second most hard to read in terms of his filmography. I think some people might argue Eraserhead is, but I think over time we've kind of understood what Eraserhead is, with the fear of being a father and, you know, starting this new chapter and being afraid of if you're ever gonna being able to handle it, or you know, or wondering if you're good enough to do it, right? It's all those fears, all those anxieties, blah, 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 all that stuff. So we kind of understand that. This is different because this has the feeling of what he'll later do with Mulholland Drive, which is, this is going to be presented to you very strange, but here's the keys. Go unlock the locks and figure it out. Okay? This one, not so much. This one's sort of, you know, like... This looks like you'll be able to figure it out, but I'm not going to give you any help, right?
So I was just about to say, I was like, because I was drawing the same comparison. I was like, well, with Mulholland Drive, he gave us clues.
Yeah.
And I was even talking to Mom about the movie, because I think my mom would really enjoy the movie. I did warn her that Patricia Arquette got those yiddies out the whole movie.
Jesus Christ.
But I was telling her, I was like, have you seen Mulholland Drive? And she was like, oh yeah, I love Mulholland Drive. I was like, so, you know, with Mulholland Drive, he gives you the answers. Now, granted, he doesn't overtly give those, as we discussed in our episode.
No.
Everyone should go listen to that.
Yeah, everybody should.
If anyone doesn't know, it's called Tale of Two Women. It was before we were doing episodes on here. Or were we? I don't remember. Tale of Two Women. If it is on here, maybe Future Rain will pop it in the corner.
I don't think it is.
But anyway, as we discussed in that, Lynch does give us answers, but he's not overtly saying, like, well, here are the answers. He still wants us, the audience, to figure it out. The whole time I was watching Lost Highway, I was like, where are these clues? I'm not finding them. And then it was probably middle of the movie. I was like, he's not giving us anything.
No.
This is Twin Peaks Lynch all over again. I don't want to give you the answers. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just watch it.
Yeah. And I know that there is some sort of like ideas, right? Because there's some idea of coherence in this, because it would be foolish to think that it's not supposed to make sense at all. You know, of course it's supposed to make sense. It's a story. You just need to figure it out. And so, like, a lot of doppelganger stuff going on here. There's, you know, there's some identity things going on. There's a literal highway, you know, that I think is important. There's love triangles. There's mob activity. And there's a murder and a mystery man. So,
yeah,
you know, it has all these makings of something that should make sense. And then it doesn't along the way, because at one minute we're hanging out with Bill Pullman, then the next it's Balthazar Getty. And then I don't know what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just so interesting, right? Because where to begin? I guess we can start with Fred and Renee, in the beginning.
Yeah.
Which also ties into the end, because it's Fred who's telling himself, about Dick Laurent, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because that's not consistent. Right, because the sleazy porno guy is alive at the beginning of the film, but then he's dead at the end of the film when we loop around again. At least Bill Pullman is looping around again, but I don't think that, honestly, I'm bringing it up because I don't even think it even matters.
Well, also, I want to say, don't you mean Fun Boy from The Crow?
Yes.
Dude, as soon as I saw his face, I was like, oh my god, it's Fun Boy, the guy who killed Brandon Lee.
Yikes.
Nah, he didn't kill Brandon Lee. The gun master killed Brandon Lee.
That's right.
Anyway, yeah, Yeah, because see, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, is this like a time loop scenario where...
I don't think so. I don't think so. See, I think... Well, we'll get to what I think later, but...
Yeah. We'll save that. So I think you're right. I think we should start with Fred and Renee. Because, I mean, this is where Lynch is dropping us anyway, is beginning with these characters. Which also, man, shout out to Bill Pullman, dude. He's the best.
Bill Pullman's great.
Like,
yeah,
he's awesome. Hopefully, nothing bad happens to him after this episode comes out. I don't want to be responsible for that. but no, yeah. And I really love it when, we'll get back into it, but I really love it when Lynch works with an actor you feel like wouldn't do a movie like this.
I think, you know, about, like, that the entire time I'm watching a Lynch film, because especially in this movie, I'm watching Robert Loggia, you know, give this really weird performance, and it's kind of his same old, but then, you know, when he chases that guy in the car and he's giving him a driver's ed lesson while he's kicking the shit out of him. Like, do you think Robert Loggia was just like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, what do you mean? Like, what am I doing?
I was in big. What am I doing?
So I think about that all the time, because it's so unique to find people that you don't think would jive with this sort of, like, high concept art house surrealistic sort of a deal, right? To me, Robert Loggia wouldn't do that. But yet here he is. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the same could be said for Bill Pullman. Of course, Bill Pullman, then I think a year later does Casper. So it's or two. I think Casper was 99, 2000. But
it was either before this. I don't remember when Independence Day came out.
95. So it was before that.
Okay.
Okay, but that just proved my point. The 2 years prior, he did a live action version of Casper.
Yeah.
And then does this. So
I mean, he does Independence Day around this time also.
Yeah. So I mean, Bill Pullman isn't entirely out of the realm of possibility, but it is still kind of jarring, especially, again, you know, knowing what you and I know from seeing Twin Peaks and other of Lynch films that, like, you know, it just feels like, as you just said, that, like, I like the word you use, jive, that it just seems like Bill Pullman he'd be like, what? I don't understand this. Why would I do this?
You know? It seems like, you know, when you see people on screen in the Lynch film, you're just like, that's cool that they got it, you know, or at least were willing to give it a try. I think that that's really neat, because I think in other work, I think Robert Forster is one that I was like, that is so cool that Robert Forster is like, yeah, cool, yeah, I'll do it. You know, do I understand it? Maybe not, but I got it, you know? Yeah. And I like that. So, yes, Bill Pullman and Patricia Arquette. Arquette, she's up for anything. We've seen her do a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And later on, I think it's 2 years after this, she'll be in another film that I think is sort of surreal and sort of fast paced and really cool and stylized, which is Bringing Out the Dead, with Nick Cage. It's a Martin Scorsese film and it's amazing. So people should watch that. One of his lesser known,
you know, so I kind of forgot Patricia Arquette was in this movie. I forget about her a lot just mainly because I haven't really seen Patricia Arquette in a lot of stuff. You know, True Romance is one. I'm sure I've seen more, but that's the only one that's coming to mind.
Nobody watched Medium in your household.
I mean, I watched it my dad got kind of into it, but yeah, that's right? About it. But yeah, you know, but I still, I think that's why it was so jarring when, we essentially see her naked the whole movie, because I was like, Patricia Arquette is like nude this whole movie. What is happening?
Yeah.
But anyway, So Fred and Renee.
Back on track.
Getting us back on track. So, you know, Jack and Renee's relationship is very, it's very on brand for Lynch, because it is a very strange relationship that he's a saxophonist and Renee is essentially a trophy wife, you know? And it's just, I don't know. Lynch is really good at writing just very odd relationship pairings, you know?
Yeah, they seem, like, they do seem very unhappy, right? They seem strained. Mm-hmm. Like any sort of minor inconvenience in the future is going to set either of them off, right? Mm-hmm. They're teetering on the edge, and you're right. It lends to this weird, you know, atmosphere around them, right? And then when this weird stuff starts happening, you know, that's sort of like heightened with like, there's already like high tension in the house. And then there's this, you know, upgraded tension with the videotapes and where they're coming mm-hmm. from. And you can tell that Renee is sort of maybe not faithful, right? She's hanging out with that sleazeball from The Crow.
His character's name is Andy.
Okay, thank you. Hanging out with Andy at that party, and you know, she doesn't seem too faithful to Fred. But yeah, the videotapes are really interesting. That they're just shots of them in their house and of the house, and you know, it's just very voyeuristic and very intrusive. And I don't want to say it goes nowhere, because that's not true, but it's sort of like, okay, you know, because it doesn't really get brought up again, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Lynch, because, you know, again, as we kind of said, you know, Lynch, if there is an answer, he's for sure not giving it, of why these videotapes, one, are showing up, and two, just why, period.
Yeah, you think it might be the mystery man, right? It's Robert Blake.
I mean, that kind of gets a call back at the end, towards the end.
Yeah, it has to be him, because he has his camcorder, right? And that plays a big role in his character. But, you know, the sort of why of it all is sort of, you know, I'm not sure. Fun fact, that's David Lynch's house that they're in.
I remember when I started watching, is it Over My Shoulder or Can You See It in Frame? I'm not going to point to it. When I started watching David Lynch, The Art Life, I was like, that house looks familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he has multiple houses, but that's his house that they're shooting in, and that's his furniture and all that stuff. So that's kind of why it already feels like a Lynch. It's like they didn't even have to set deck or anything. It's just how it is.
Well, and you know, it's probably because he could be like, we'll shoot here for cheap. It's all good.
For sure. He didn't have to worry about permits or anything. And, you know, he can fix his own walls. It's fine.
But yeah, you know, and I do like that, even that this is a surrealist film, that they do legitimately go to the cops, you know, that the cops try to do the best they can. Because there's little.
The cops are also Lynchian, right? They're sort of like.
Yeah.
They kind of look like Jake and the Fat Man, by the way. Google it if you don't know what they look like. But it's an old show from the 70s and 80s, which I thought was funny. But yeah, they're definitely Lynch cops. You know?
Yeah.
They're sort of aloof in a way. Or they don't seem like they're in a hurry.
It kind of reminded me of, and shout out to our Big Lebowski episode. It kind of reminded me of when he asks the impound cop if they got any leads, and he's like, "Yeah, they're working us overtime," like just taking the piss out of him. And that's kind of what it reminded me of, is that they weren't really taking it seriously. I mean, they were taking it just seriously enough to be like, look, we'll look into it, but we're not giving you a definite answer.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's bizarre, but it's whatever. I mean, what can they do, right? I mean, it's just you're getting videotapes and whatever. And even when she was on the phone with the police, they didn't seem like too worried about it, you know? Yeah. But once we meet, okay. So I think it's safe to say my favorite character is the mystery man. It's Robert Blake, right?
Is it because, and I'm not making a pun, but is it because there is so much mystery surrounding him?
Yes, maybe. I think it's because out of everybody, you know, we're definitely going to get no explanation for him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of like the cowboy in Mulholland Drive in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So the mystery man. I keep calling him that because I don't think he has a name.
Everything I looked up, it just kept saying the mystery man.
So this interaction between him and Fred at the party is amazing for a few reasons.
Oh, yeah.
One, it's just scary. He's a scary looking guy, you know? Robert Blake already has sort of this sort of air around him that, you know, makes him just seem like, I don't want to mess with this guy, talk to this guy, whatever. Later proven when he murders his wife in the future. But
wait, like legitimately?
Blake, yeah.
Oh my God.
But the way he's made up, he almost looks like, almost exactly like Death from the Seventh Seal, if anyone has seen the Ingmar Bergman film, The Seventh Seal. It's sort of how his face is made up to be, and, you know, how the makeup looks. And what I love about Lynch in this specific scene is there is no more music. There is no more chit chatter. There's no more nothing. It's just them two, and that is all you hear, right? And then we get that interaction with the phone. Like, you know, he's like, I'm at your house right now, as a matter of fact. And then he calls, and sure enough, there he is at the house. And, you know, that's so crazy. You know, how did he do that? It's very surreal. It's very scary. It's very creepy. And just every time he ends up in a scene after that, you're just like, man, what is this guy's deal? Who is he? You know?
Uh-huh.
He obviously is doing some sort of string pulling, you know, he's puppeteering something with all of this, you know? Or it's not. I don't know. You know, that's the sort of fun with Lynch, is you just have no idea. But with this guy, it's just on another level. I just don't know. He is significant. I just don't know.
Neither do I. Because, you know, that scene in particular, he comes across as he's like, Lynch is sort of setting him up as he's the main villain of this whole thing. But then, and we'll get to it, but I just want to give a little tease for it, is, but then it's almost like he's helping Fred with Dick, Mr. Eddie, like,
in a way, because they're sort of connected from the beginning, because there's that moment where Fred is feeling, you know, some sort of, you know, anger or contention towards Renee, and it was either a nightmare or
his face
right, and it was some sort of, like, I don't know, a hallucination or something. And so that was very strange. That was the first time we saw him. And then we see him again at the party.
But yeah,
he does seem to be some sort of aid to Fred near the end, with Mr. Reddy / Dick Laurent. And I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, time for the biggest thing that I still have yet to figure out is Renee's murder. You know, we see that shortly after they get home from the party,
mm-hmm.
you know, we see Fred watching a new tape that's just showed up, but it's him over Renee's dismembered body.
Yeah.
And we only see that really through distorted effects and the tape, but like, we're never told what happened to her, really.
Sure. I think that's sort of like, I felt that was sort of beside the point. I think the point that's supposed to be, I think, taken from that is that he did kill her, right?
Okay.
We assume the mystery man was there because it's being recorded. And now he's going to prison for her murder, right? We're not even going to entertain did he or didn't he, right? We're just going to move straight on to he was found guilty and convicted and he's on death row, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fascinating. Which brings me to my opener from the beginning of the show. David Lynch said that, you know, maybe it was subconscious, maybe it was a little bit conscious, but the O.J. Simpson trial factored in so heavily into him writing and creating this movie because it was such a part of the public conscious at the time and that it was impossible to stay away from. And it was so fascinating and captivating that it had such an influence on Lost Highway while he was making it.
That makes sense.
That's so interesting.
Especially considering, like you just said, that Fred is found guilty almost overnight, it seems.
It seems.
And sentenced to death almost immediately. You know, knowing that context, it makes a lot of sense that that the O.J. Simpson trial was, that's interesting. I was wondering why you were making that joke, but now we've come full circle. So,
but isn't that so fascinating that, you know, which is very Lynch, because Lynch will, you know, see something cool that day on his way to the set, or like he'll be reading something, or he'll be like having a conversation with someone, find something interesting, put it in that day's shoot on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will be, you know, graveling about it for years and years because it's just something he thought was cool or interesting or impulsive and he put it in. And then if someone notices and wondering what it means nothing. It just means it's what he did for the day, which is why Lynch is so impossible sometimes to figure out.
You know, sidebar, speaking of Lynch, I was telling Mom about his YouTube channel and she was like, he has a YouTube channel? I was like, yeah. He literally posts daily a weather report of him just in front of his phone telling you the day, telling you the time, and telling you the weather. That's it.
He's amazing.
Of course, he hasn't done it since 2022. Mom and I kind of retroactively figured out it was something for him to do during lockdown
because
he started it in 2020. And then by 2022, when COVID restrictions had started to lift and things were opening up again, he probably was like, well, I don't need to do this anymore.
Right.
I mean, it makes sense. But anyway. So this was the part of the movie that I for sure was not expecting. This sort of Twilight Zone-esque switcheroo with Fred now being replaced with Pete, who, sidebar, Balthazar Getty, what a name, dude.
Well, and what a family history. Do you know who his father is?
I'm assuming, well, yeah, I looked into it, but I'm assuming this is also the family of like the Getty Images thing.
Well, it's the Getty family. So, Balthazar's dad, which I don't think Balthazar is his real name. Balthazar's dad was the one who was kidnapped for ransom. And his grandfather refused to give the money. And he was the richest man in the world at the time. the gays. So they made a movie about it. It's called All the Money in the World.
I was just about to say, is this that fucking movie that they did with Mark Wahlberg and fucking Christopher Plummer?
Yes.
Because wasn't it supposed to be someone else?
It was supposed to be Kevin Spacey, but then it was Christopher Plummer. And
That's right.
So, yeah. So Balthazar Getty's, his dad was the one who was kidnapped. Anyway. But yes, what a name. I agree.
Well, and honestly, bro, had Lynch not had the opening titles with the actors' names at the beginning, I would have thought for sure that was Liev Schreiber. They almost look
they do look a lot alike. I agree.
Yeah, but had I not seen Balthazar Getty, I for sure would have been like, oh man, I didn't know Liev Schreiber was in this. Anyway, but yeah, this was something I was not expecting for this film.
Of course.
Because by this part, we're only like 30, 40 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be 3/4 of the movie with Pete.
Yeah.
And that's,
here's what's so interesting about it is when the switch happens, people in the film know it's a different person, right?
Yes.
So that's what's also really weird. And now you're like, okay, well, it's not what I'm thinking, because what I'm thinking is that it's sort of like this cosmic mistaken identity or this cosmic switch, and that people are going to think that's Fred, but really it's Pete. No. These are two completely different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did see one sort of explanation. It's not a real explanation because these are all just like guesses. But one of them was that this, from here on until we see Fred again, it's Fred imagining a new life for himself while he's on death row, which might be true.
Okay.
You can't disprove it, but, and then, reimagining Renee as somebody else and all that. He knows, it's established, he knows who Dick LaRon is. So, why they're calling him Mr. Eddie, I still don't understand that either. I don't know why he has two different names. But it can be explainable. Him, thinking that, this would be a better life and all of that and blah, blah, blah. I don't think it holds a lot of weight, but I don't have a better explanation myself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried so desperately. Cause as I've said in other episodes that we've done over Lynch's films, I don't want to know all the answers. I want there to be a mystery element, but there are some things where I'm like, just give me a nugget, a kernel, something to latch onto so that maybe I can then form an opinion. I was thinking it was something along the lines of what we see in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Where Pete is Fred, but Fred has been Pete the whole time, kind of thing. But then I'm like, but then this wouldn't explain a lot of things we're seeing. And especially
you have to also remember that you can't, at least chronologically, you can't use Mulholland Drive to describe Lost Highway, right? Yeah. Because Mulholland Drive hadn't happened yet. And so, God, imagine seeing this for the first time without Mulholland Drive is something to grab onto. Nothing like it in the world,
Yeah, I mean, but especially if it's that theory that, then Lynch utilized that same kind of concept for Mulholland Drive, but then really honed in on it. Because there is a lot of evidence to suggest that maybe Pete and Fred are the same person. But then there's a lot that suggests they're not,
I definitely don't believe they're the same person.
I don't either. I'm grasping at straws at this point.
So let me read you something.
Okay, read me something.
when asked the meaning of the film, which you should never do to David Lynch, okay?
No, yeah.
That's the meaning of the film. David Lynch has referred to Lost Highway as a psychogenic, psychogenic fogue. Fogue? I cannot read to save my life.
Is it anyway, fugue?
Maybe fugue. It is fugue. A form of disassociation where a person temporarily loses awareness of their identity, including their memories and personality. Which kind of explains the other theory of him imagining a new life for himself, but instead it's just completely disassociating where he is, right? Because you know he's made this horrible mistake, he's murdered his wife, and now he's being put on death row, and he's going to disassociate. And he can't disprove it,
Yeah.
Maybe using the mystery man as some sort of, and I'm going to use a Dexter phrase here, a dark passenger, perhaps, that is informing his terrible decision-making, right?
Okay.
Which is what the mystery man could represent. Sorry, my cat's being stupid. And maybe that could explain it, which I kind of like.
Maybe.
Because, I don't know. Honestly, I was just stoked to see Gary Busey.
Dude, shout out to Gary Busey. That poor man has been through so much. Side tangent. We have Rookie of the Year recorded at the store.
Nice.
And he is so awesome in that movie. And it's hard to believe, the accidents and things that he's gone through where he, doesn't even know who he is half the time. I mean,
this is before the accident, and so he's looking great. Yeah. He's coherent. He's doing good.
Dude, and honestly, that scene with him and Balthazar and him like trying to help Pete remember what happened the night of the switch.
Yeah.
And just the look of horror on Gary Busey's face, man. I was like, man, like what a phenomenal actor who we'll probably never get to see ever again on film.
I agree. It is a shame. Cause yeah, he was great in this. Also shout out to Henry Rollins, who is great in everything always, no matter what he's doing. I think Henry Rollins is a national treasure. I'm sure Stormy would agree. And maybe Zach would agree. The only two that are listening to this at the moment.
Well,
we might have even lost Stormy.
Hopefully not. Hopefully she's been listening this whole time. But also, speaking, if we're giving shout-outs to some of the actors in this movie, also shout-out to Richard Pryor, man.
Yeah.
He came on screen, and I was so happy.
Yeah.
Of course, this was 97. He would be dead a few years later, right?
It's his last movie, yeah.
Yeah. And it just made me so happy to see Richard Pryor. I mean, Richard is I think everyone should know this. He's a comedian that he can't be replicated. So I'm really glad Lynch was able to get so many of these really talented actors in this film. Also, speaking of people that I was kind of like, oh shit, to see, Giovanni Ribisi.
Giovanni Ribisi, that's right. He's in there for like a few minutes.
Yeah, dude, I was like, and of course, thanks to Seth MacFarlane, shout out to the beginning of the episode, I can't take him seriously anymore because Seth always has him dance.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing a thumbs up. Stop it. Anyway, that just ruined it for me. Okay. So getting back on track.
Right.
Everything with Pete. Track. And with Alice now, not Renee, Alice. See, and this is the part that I started to get not confused, but I was trying to put pieces together. you know, because especially when we meet Andy again, and it's the same actor.
Yeah.
I just, like, I'm like, wait, so Andy knew both Alice and Renee, especially when Pete points out the photo with them both in the photo, and she points at, Alice points at herself, not Renee. And so
I think this disassociating thing really is gonna be the key to this whole thing, because I think if he's imagining all of this in this new scenario as a new person with people that are similar but different, I think if he saw Andy as a threat, right? Because I believe they were probably having an affair, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Then it makes sense that he would kill him off. That's number one. But it would also make sense that he's also there because he needs to be there and he needs to know who everybody is, right? And he would know because your brain doesn't think about stuff like that, you know? Like, it's almost dream logic. Like, you're not going to think about, you know, what's weird and what isn't weird. It's all just normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the very end when things are starting to all converge and link together. Like, there was that photograph of both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, it's back to just being
just one Renee. Of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
it's just Renee.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, it's just weaving in and out of this dream logic and maybe the disassociation. And of course, it would explain the very, very end with what happens to Fred in the car. So.
Well, I'm going to pose another question to you.
Sure.
If some of it is like kind of trying to understand dream logic, then how is it that the cops find Pete's DNA at Andy's crime scene? Like,
I don't know, but what's happening in the real world and what's not happening in the real world, I don't know, right? And that's sort of where lines are blurred because again, this goes back to, like, Lynch infers a time loop, but really it might just be Fred trying to explain to himself or put an end to the mystery of who buzzed my intercom that day, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You know?
Yeah, I mean, again, what we've been saying, you know, especially with, again, I'm going to bring it up for probably the fourth or fifth time, Mulholland Drive. Sorry, felt a sneeze coming.
Don't.
Mulholland Drive has an answer, you know, again, everyone should go take a listen to that episode because you actually laid it out for me, because when you told me that there was an answer, I was like, okay, cool. And then I didn't figure it out. And so thankfully you laid it out for me.
Lots
so Mulholland Drive has an answer, but there is so many things about this movie that I'm like, cause then, you know, when Pete becomes Fred again, Alice is gone. But then the biggest thing, the thing that I'm still like, Renee is alive. Like, and she's hooking up with Dick Laurent, Mr. Eddie. And I'm like, so what is happening? But at the same time, it doesn't ruin it for me. Like, after I finished the movie, I was reading a lot of things about people when the film was first released. People didn't like it. You know, one critic even called it incoherent. And I'm like, not necessarily, I don't think it's incoherent.
I understand the criticism because
Yeah.
I do like this movie. It's, again, it's one of these movies that's less approachable than Mulholland Drive or even Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks has time to lay out all of this lore, you know?
Well, and Lynch had Mark Frost to kind of keep him in check, pretty much.
Yeah, you're right.
But, I mean, so yeah, I also understand the criticism and understand why people didn't like it. But I don't agree with it being incoherent. I would just say it's a little... It's surreal. That's what it is. It's a surrealist film that,
yeah,
you know, and again, as we've been discussing, Lynch doesn't like giving out answers, and I'm sure he never will. I'm sure.
No, of course.
When the day finally comes that you and I get to interview him, I guarantee you, he will stop the interview the minute one of us says, so anyway, so what did you, what did it mean when, nope, we're done.
You know, it's like one of my favorite quotes is like, he mentioned something about Eraserhead being a spiritual film. And it's like, will you expand on that? And he goes, no. You know, it's so good, you know? So speaking of critics, Roger Ebert's one of those people that hated the movie.
Of course he did.
He didn't. Well, hate would be like a 0 stars. He gave it 2. Okay.
And he was just like, what?
So here's the quote from the Ebert review that I think is very funny. He says, it's how he opens the review. Okay. Because David Lynch's Lost Highway is like kissing a mirror. You like what you see, but it's not much fun and it's kind of cold.
Oh man,
it's funny. And what's really funny is when Siskel and Ebert, when they had their show, oh man, what a time it must have been to be alive and watch their show. They gave it 2 thumbs down, and during the, it was either on the poster or something, on the Lost Highway thing, it said 2 more reasons to watch Lost Highway. Was there 2 thumbs down? They thought it was petty. I think it's kind of funny. It's like, he's over there talking about kissing mirrors. You can't be too mad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, man, and I think that's why Lynch has such a huge draw to his films, is because not everyone's going to get it, you know? Some people like us, you know, Zach, Stormy, you know, will gravitate to it just because it has Lynch's name on it, you know.
Well, Lynch is another style of surrealist comfort, where he's taking things that you're familiar with, but he's twisting it a little, right? Which is why Blue Velvet is so well regarded, and it's why Twin Peaks is so loved. And you know, it's taking something that you're used to, and then he's just putting his little twist on it, and he's doing what he does to it, and it becomes stuff like this, which if you love crime films and you love noir films, you love these weird, like, psychosexual, erotic thrillers of this time period, even of the 90s, then, you know, people who love Lynch, who don't really understand those other types of movies, that think they're just like a waste of time, or they're trash, or they're sort of too run of the mill, or they're too paint by numbers, then he made you one, right? He goes, here's something in those genres that's popular today, but I made it my own, and I made it surreal, and I made it not make that much sense, you know? Yeah. Or I made it not make linear sense or logical sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're right. You're right. You know, again, even though Eraserhead was my least favorite, that doesn't mean I didn't dislike the movie. I just didn't maybe fully get it. But there's something to be said about his directing style and about his personality as a whole. You know, the fact that he pretty much wears the same thing all the time: a black button-up shirt, khaki pants, rips cigarettes like it's, you know, inhaling air.
Could you imagine wearing the same thing all the time?
Dude, I've often wondered what it's like when he goes to his closet, like, black, 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 black. Oh, darker black. Here we go.
Okay. It's fine. Yeah, wearing the same thing must be exhausting. Or maybe it's you know, it's thrilling.
Or I was about to say, maybe it's freeing for him because he doesn't have to worry about what he's wearing.
You're absolutely right.
It's like, I'm wearing the same thing. Like, I'm wearing...
It's the Steve Jobs shirt. Method. That's what he did after a while. Elizabeth Holmes also. And look how good she's doing.
I also love that, as we've discussed, that even in the Cleveland show, he's animated with a black shirt and khaki pants.
He's awesome. Dude... I know we've probably never talked about it on the show before with David Lynch, but that's one of the things that makes me happy, and it also makes no sense to me. It's why he was like, sure, I'll be on the Cleveland show.
That Seth MacFarlane was like, hey, do you want to be in this animated show and play yourself?
Basically, playing himself as a bartender, it's hilarious, you know? And it's just so crazy. Anyway, I want to briefly talk about the very, very end. And, okay. You know, with him being chased down on that highway, Lost Highway, presumably.
Was it the Lost Highway?
Perhaps. In a very OJ type way, by the way, he's being chased down the highway. Yes. Sorry, my cat is being so stupid. Quit it. Is that now he's starting to like sizzle and be burned, right? And I think at that moment, his disassociation has taken him as far as being strapped to the electric chair. And I think that he's, you know, being executed at that moment, right?
And that
his, you know, again, his split from reality has carried him through up until the very end, and that's what we're seeing in the car. I think that's what's going
on. Well, you know what, man, that makes a lot of sense, you know, because his face starts to, you know,
it gets gross.
That makes a lot of sense, man.
Thanks.
I think you just, I didn't come up with
it. I'm sure I read it somewhere.
What are you gonna do, man, when this episode goes out and there's a knock at your door, and you open it, it's David Lynch, and he's like, how dare you solve the mystery of Lost Highway?
I listened to it, I found where he lived, and I'm here to say congrats.
He congratulates you. Like, no one was able to figure out... That was my Lynch.
I wasn't expecting you to do the voice. That's good.
Well, he's got a very interesting voice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he congratulates you, and then gives you a lifetime supply of black coffee and cigarettes, and you're just...
I was
like,
gonna hope he'd be like, now I'm gonna give you a haircut, and he's gonna give me a haircut like his hair.
Haley comes home and she's like, who's this man?
I know she wouldn't know. I don't think I'm sure or I've it's or, enough, but
or it's gonna be that Family Guy cutaway of him like coming down your chimney.
Yeah, no, let for the future, let the fear wash over you.
For in the future, I'd like a plate of black coffee. and then he asks you, he's like, well, where's the other one? And you're like, he's in Florida somewhere. I don't know.
And I couldn't tell you.
And then he like just happens to find me at Disney World. And I'm like, like, there's so many people here. How did you find me?
He has mysterious ways. I wouldn't, you know, he's also the mystery man. Like, he just knows.
Oh man. Well, Jeremy, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Probably. I think it's insane Marilyn Manson's in the movie also.
Oh my god. Okay, I guess this is our oops, I forgot. So,
yeah.
I didn't want to look anything up about the movie, but I did briefly peruse the cast list. And I saw his name. I was like, you're fucking lying to me. You're lying. And so, for a while, I was like, okay, well, where is he? Like, I'm scanning the frame. I'm like, where the fuck is he?
Yeah.
Like, it's impossible to miss Marilyn Manson.
You're right.
And so then I thought maybe it was just a mistake. You know, IMDb, as we know, can be edited. So I was like, maybe it's a mistake.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no, there he is right there. Yep. That's
him.
And then he dies.
Immediately.
Or something.
Yeah. So that whole sequence is sort of weird. But again, we're verging on like the very end of this whole thing. And things are starting to not make so much sense, if they were before even, but because that's when he was showing, the mystery man was showing Dick LaRonde that video, right?
That then it cuts to them watching it at Andy's house. Yeah.
Right. And it like that the porno turned into some sort of like weird snuff film also, and that's sort of bizarre. I didn't really understand that either, but
yeah.
It's okay. I have years to figure it out, hopefully, if I live that long. I don't know. It's a cool movie. I like it. The soundtrack slaps if you haven't. It's
dude,
Trent Reznor and Friends. Dude,
and the fact that it opens with a fucking Bowie song, I was like,
yeah, dude, like, I know. The soundtrack's killer, man. Probably maybe the best soundtrack of Lynch's filmography for sure.
And so, okay, maybe here's the other oops I forgot too. I think that's another reason why I felt like this one was so different, is because he was really utilizing music in the film. You know,
I agree.
It reminded me of maybe this is where he gets it, like James Gunn. You know, maybe James Gunn, you know, saw this movie and was like, I like his use of music. Because yeah, man,
we're making associations here, I don't know,
like that German metal song that started playing twice, I was like,
man, like, and I was gonna look up who that was, because there is a famous German metal band.
I'm sure, more than likely, you know, because most people think of like Rammstein.
That's who I thought it might have been, maybe. But I can look it up right now.
Let's see who can get to it quicker. Dude.
Oh, nice, dude. Nice.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Hell so, yeah. Two songs on the soundtrack. So good job. One of the songs is called Rammstein, which makes perfect sense. Yeah. Cool. Good job. So yeah, it's like Nine Inch Nails. It's Lou Reed. It's Marilyn Manson, of course. Yeah, Bowie. Yeah, great album. So check that out. I think the second best, if I were to come up with an answer, would be Twin Peaks: The Return, the Roadhouse Sessions, with all the bands mm-hmm, that are in the Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the second best soundtrack in Lynch's filmography, probably. Yeah, glad you liked it. It's a weird one. Again, it's sort of hard to, you know, to penetrate the meaning in this one. I mean, heaven forbid you ever see Inland Empire, you're just not going to know what to do with yourself. You're going to be completely lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, but we'll see. I mean, you know, I've seen your list for next season, so I'm excited. True. I'm excited for that. So, but
yeah.
Well, Jeremy, what are we going to be talking about next week? You know, when I'm back from Disney.
Yep. So let's just shush. So I'm gonna tell him.
Was that Abby or Annie?
It's Abby.
He was like, Dad, tell him.
I'm telling him. I'm going to tell him. So if you made it this far, congratulations. You made it through our ramblings of nonsense. Next week, we are going to hold on. I want to make sure I get it correct, because if I don't, it's going to make me sad. And I don't want that. So
I'm waiting in anticipation.
You shiver with anticipation.
What's funny is before you say the movie, Mom bought me these pins, like, you know, that you can put on like clothes and stuff like that. And it says antissa... ... And the other one says ... patient.
I like that.
And she was like, you better put it on your backpack when you go to Disney. And so I did, took a picture of it, and she was like, okay, good. I was like, I told you I was going to put them on.
So. It's an opposite size of the backpack, I guess.
Kind of, but. All right, buddy, so what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we are going to be discussing the Joel Cohen adaptation of Shakespeare's Tragedy of Macbeth. That's what we're going to talk about next week. So.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Oh man, dude.
It's awesome.
Dude, when you told me that you were taking a movie off and putting this one on, I was like, yes.
I had to make sure I got the right tone though.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, because this is only one. It's only one. Ethan was busy with something. Who knows? But you know, this is so. I'm so excited, man! I'm so excited. I have been dreaming of the day when this gets a physical release, because I want it so badly.
So I technically have one, but it's a bootleg, of course.
Yeah,
but it's awesome. It's on my shelf. It's over there. And it's worth having. I gotta be honest with you, because it plays really well. It's got a great transfer. It's awesome. But anyway, Tragedy of Macbeth. I remember being so excited when it was announced. And being obsessed with it. I was like, it's going to be in black and white. Denzel's playing Macbeth. That's going to be really interesting. And it's going to be this weird aspect ratio. It's going to be kind of surrealist. I was like, okay. And then I saw it and it just blew me away. I couldn't believe how awesome it was. And just how different it felt from anything Joel Cohen had ever done before. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember showing Ashley the trailer, and she didn't know what it was at first. But you know, we'd already seen that movie, uh-huh. The Green Knight, together, and she was like, "Oh, A24 doing like another medieval movie," and I already knew what it was, but I wanted to see her reaction. And as soon as the weird sisters say, "By the pricking of my thumbs," she immediately knew, and she was like, "You're kidding? Are you kidding?" And she got really excited and then never watched it with me. So,
damn. But now she can.
I'm going to try to be like, hey, you really wanted to see this. Let's watch it together. Apple TV Plus. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Awesome, man. I'm so excited.
Cool.
Well, everyone, we hoped you enjoyed this episode of Lost Highway. Stormy, we hope you enjoyed it. Let me know, and we will see you next week for the Tragedy of Macbeth.